Spring break isn't what it used to be. It's better. This spring, stay 3 nights and get a $50 Best Western gift card. Life's a trip. Make the most of it at Best Western. Visit bestwestern.com for complete terms and conditions.
And we're back. It's Inside Boxing Live, presented by PPV.com. Dan Canobio, Chris Algieri, coming to you in late August as the calendar turns to September. Some big fights coming down the pipeline. Always follow along at PPV.com on socials. Got some big fights to announce, to stream. Never a subscription. Always a good time with us in the live interactive chat. Stream it to your phone, your TV, any device. PPV.com, our proud presenting sponsor. Chris, it's been a minute. We are a little jumbled. You know, it's the end of summer. We want to see family. We want to go to the beach. I want to relive my glory days out in Montauk. But we also have a lot of things going on in the box. That's why we haven't exactly been on our normal schedule. We will be back on our normal schedule, but it is nice to be back talking boxing in a very, very big way. How are you, Chris?
I'm doing good. I'm doing great. I mean, I never stopped talking boxing, but I don't talk boxing, seeing your face all that often lately, but we're getting back to that. Sorry, we're getting back to our paces. We're good,
bro. I called 20 fights in 24 hours in Orlando. Got sick awesome. Somehow, nearly killed me.
You got the boxing flu. Florida, that happens, man. The boxing flu is real,
bro. Every time I go to Florida, I get some type of sickness. I got COVID there last summer. I went another time. I got sick. This time, I think it was just like my body got like worn down from calling all those fights. I kind of underestimated the 20 fights and being locked in for 7+ hours both nights. Awesome time. Had a blast. MVP, Most Valuable Promotions, put on a doubleheader prospects card on Friday night. This was Jean-Paul Rivera winning the main event. So Jamal Harvey, who was the Olympian from 2024 team, make his debut and make his opponent quit. His opponent said, "I'm bored," and quit. That is verbatim. That was the weirdest thing I've ever seen. And then Saturday night, we have a potential fight of the year contender. Edbes Barrow upsets Yoenis Teles, followed by the worst fight I've ever seen between Cordova and Yankee Rivera. So it was a busy-ass weekend calling fights with Tarver, and I was with Donaire. Got a little under the weather, but I'm back, baby. I'm back.
Bro, you got the boxing flu. Welcome to calling a lot of fights, because this happens. Your voice gets a little scratchy. You end up getting sick. You're around a bunch of people, fighter meeting, shaking hands, people. It's being a boxing commentator, you're surrounded by a lot of people. And they're not always the cleanest people. They're not always the healthiest people. There's a lot of guys making weight, or their immune systems are shot, and they're around you. You're shaking hands. You forget to wash your hands. It's the boxing flu. It happens. It happens to the best of us. Plus, you're in Florida, and Florida's not for the weak. So, Jan, bro,
Florida is a crazy place, man.
You got to pump up that immune system, like, bro.
Do you think I think my immune system was weakened from the calling of all the fights? Because, like, at the end of the night, Friday night, I felt like my voice getting a little scratchy. I feel like I had like a sore throat. Woke up the next day, another 9 fights on the docket to call. And I was like, okay, I feel a little tired. And then midway through that, I was like, I'm dead. Like, I feel like I'm dying.
Yeah, you got COVID-25. It's going around.
I feel like I can taste food and stuff. I don't have a fever. I have something.
I'm kidding.
I don't. Dude, if you told me I had COVID-25, I'd believe you, because I don't even know what this is.
Well, I think everything's COVID now, so it's like I stubbed my toe. It's COVID, but
I didn't even bother to take a COVID test. I was just like, whatever. No, I'm
for
fine.
What?
Yeah, there's no sense. Another reason why we've kind of been jumbled up here, doing once a week. We're gonna get back to twice a week in September. It's because Chris is on a special assignment. He's part of a very cool project that only Chris Algieri can be part of. He's part of the this boxing Illuminati. So why don't you tell us, Chris, what you've been up to the last couple of weeks, what you'll be doing for the next few months?
Yeah, if you guys haven't noticed, I'm in these hotel rooms bouncing around. I'm not on the run. I know I'm rocking this mustache like I'm in disguise. I'm incognito. But no, I'm not in my normal beautiful Florida where Dan just got from. I'm working on this 1984 boxing movie, and got a really fun project over the next couple months working with all the actors getting ready for the film. It's been super fun. It's actually something I've been working on for months, well, you know, without telling anyone. But now it's here. We are getting everybody ready. You know, it's a ton of work. It's crazy. It's crazy how much work it is to get all these actors ready to play some of your favorite fighters from 1984. So very cool project. More is going to come as you know, the months roll on in terms of what I can divulge. But for now, that's it. I got a cool project. I'm on location. And so you're going to see some more of the back of this hotel room.
So it's a movie about the 1984
Olympic boxing team, the amateur team, the greatest Olympic boxing team of all time. Wow. And it's pretty cool. You know, Pearl Whitaker, Evander Holyfield, Tyrell Biggs, Henry Tillman, Meldrick Taylor, you know, so it's a huge project and very, very cool. It's going to be on Netflix. So it's a big, big production. And
your job is to whip these actors into shape.
Whip them into shape and also choreograph the fights. So writing out the fight scenes.
Wow.
Yeah, choreographing the fights. That's my official actual title is fight choreographer. And I hired a few trainers to help me. And yeah, we're going through the paces with these guys, getting everybody in shape. Got lucky. The actors are all a bunch of good athletes. Yeah, it's training camp, dude. It's basically, I'm training a bunch of guys to fight. And it's a lot of fun. It's something I'm very used to doing. I'm used to dealing with boxers, not actors. So there is that. But otherwise, it's very, very similar. Schedule's intense, though. These boys are going to be in shape. I want them ripped and ready and looking like they know how to box.
Well, how are you feeling? I feel like I've seen you. Well, we've been chatting and stuff, and you're like, "Oh, I did 40,000 steps. I'm getting." Do you feel like you're back training for a fight?
I do. I mean, we got morning sessions, afternoon sessions. I'm in the boxing gym, moving around with these guys, holding pads, you know, running with them in the morning, putting them through ab routine. I haven't done abs or stretch in so long, and I'm doing that every single day. I do feel like I'm in camp a little bit.
Just hope this doesn't spawn a comeback for Chris Algieri.
No, I mean, it'll spawn a comeback for me in movies, maybe. I might be in some more movies and TV shows, but I'm not getting back to the fight now.
This podcast is going to be defunct because you're just going to be like, I don't have time for you, Dan. I'm a movie star now. I'm a television star. I'm a Netflix guy.
Dude, I've done in a few TV shows and different things like that and worked on movies before, so this is nothing new. There's a lot of downtime in Hollywood, so plenty of time to talk boxing.
All right.
Don't you worry.
Perfect. I love that. Yeah, so that's pretty damn cool. So Chris will give in more information. I'm sure more information will come out from the movie people about this movie.
Movie. Mutterings. A lot of people know about this. Like when it got brought up, like guys like, oh, that's that movie. And this and that. I'm like, oh, wow, okay. All right. So maybe it's not that much of a secret.
That's so cool, man. Because boxing movies are like, as much as people say, oh, boxing's dying, come up to me, it's a niche sport. There's always a market for boxing movies because it is the best theater, best stories. This is all based on a true story. These fighters that were on the 1984 team. But just like the cinema, I always say when you go to a big boxing match, it looks like a movie. Like when you're watching Tyson Fury make his big entrance and the other guy's in the ring waiting, it's theater. And then you throw in the backstories, which all these fighters have insane backstories. I mean, that's when you get a thriller. So hopefully this is a really big movie and it gets more boxing fans to be made of. It's pretty freaking cool, man. What a life. Yeah, Chris Algieri leads.
And you never know. I do it in secret. I'm just doing my work. I agree with that sentiment about boxing movies because it's such a human interest because it's generally one guy that you're talking about and we all have these crazy stories, kind of like the book that I wrote, you know, a few years ago, that So You Want to Be a Fighter, telling the backstory of these champions. And we're getting to do that real time in like major Hollywood production. So it's a good script. Can't tell you anything about the script, but it's a very good script thus far. And a lot of fight scenes, a lot of boxing scenes, dude. This is going to be the most boxing heavy movie that's ever been made.
That's what I want to hear because sometimes we'll watch a boxing movie and like it'll be more about the plot and the movie. The fight scenes will be like a joke or like I know everyone loved. What's the moment Jake Gyllenhaal? Everyone loves that. Southpaw.
Mm-hmm. Southpaw.
I thought the fight scenes in that were pretty bad, but it was. Yeah,
I thought the fighter was the same way. Fighter was a great story, but the fight scenes were god awful. Like
really, I thought they were good.
Oh, so bad. Mark Wahlberg cannot just, dude. I don't know what he thought he was doing.
Pacquiao said it best. I said he thinks he's a fighter. He goes, he's a good actor. Dude, good actor, I thought sure. Like, what do you think has the best fight scenes? What movie do you think has the best fight scenes?
So greatest fight scenes, most realistic fight scenes of any movie ever is the movie The Boxer with Daniel Day-Lewis. Like an amateur fight. It's crazy. It's crazy how accurate it is. But accurate doesn't leave for the best Hollywood looks.
Creed was pretty. Chris Creed was pretty good.
I didn't love Creed. I don't think Michael B. Jordan's very good at looking like a boxer. He's just jacked. He's way too jacked for one. No boxers look like that. He's just too, it's too puffy and round. Nobody looks like that. Then
your fighters won't look like that. Your fighters are going to be leaned out.
No, they're athletes and they're young. Then they're not, we're not, there's no bulk. Everyone's got to be lean. They're playing 20-year-old amateurs. So they have to be, you know, lean and ripped up.
Amazing. All right. Yeah. So everyone keep it locked to, all that news. That's pretty damn cool. Podcast host, fight coordinator, author. What else?
Fight chef, commentator. Boxing
fight commentator. Mm-hmm. One-time promoter.
Still my... Yes, one-time promoter. Soon to steak be future eater. Promoter as well. Steak reviewer.
One-time steak reviewer on our social media. we got to do more of those. All right, let's get into it. This weekend, I was actually on the call, as I just talked about. Big-time shakeup at 154 pounds. Abbas Burrow, welcome to the big leagues. He upsets Yoenis Teixeira, unanimous decision. I thought it was a great fight. I thought Burrow was just looking lethal in there, just very composed type of fighter. Had an answer for everything Teixeira brought him. Actually took the fight to Teixeira, which kind of Teixeira does to his opponents. Broke him down late, stopped him, or dropped him in the last round to secure the win. Was awesome stuff. To be on the call for that was a thrill. But he is now the interim champ at 154, at least by the WBA standards, and he's going to be ordered to be fighting Jermell Charlo. And Teixeira gets knocked off. He was ranked 10th by the Ring Magazine. He's now the interim title means a lot in boxing because that should get you a shot at a title. So when Crawford steps into the ring on September 13th, he will relinquish the WBA belt. And then according to the WBA, Burrow and Charlo will fight for the real whatever title they call it, the main WBA 154 title. Long story short, Burrow is a beast. I've heard people tell me about this guy for a while now, and he came in there and took the fight to Teixeira, and awesome to see an upset. Great fight.
Yeah, this is a classic too much too soon matchup. Matchmakers, I don't know if they did their homework on Burrow, but he's a bad dude. He's a split decision loss to Jack Holke, who gives everybody trouble. And that was in Germany, so who knows? He might have won that fight and be undefeated. He fought Sam Eggington, who's always a tough out. This guy had way too much experience for Teixeira, and he's durable.
I think he's mandated to fight him.
Yeah, well, that was, again, too much too soon. You got to protect certain prospects at certain points of their career. Teixeira had a big upside, and he had never faced anyone that had given you a reason to think that this was a good fight, because even Julian Williams, I hate saying it, but a shot. And, you know, he went to decision with him, went 12 rounds with him. We were there at that fight. It was in the Barclays Center. You know, he had a good win over Johan Gonzalez. Burrow's he's a world-class guy. And this was a big step up for having as few fights as Teixeira have. And this is what you get. And he took a lot of damage, too. I hate to see a young prospect get hit that much and hurt late in a fight, in a 12-round fight. So that's a tough out for Teixeira. And see how much that takes away from him.
He took a lot of damage, you're right. Big time shots. But early on, Teixeira was imposing his will. And then about the third or fourth round, Burrow just flipped script, was landing on the inside, just looked like a world beater in there, just looked really good. It's good for him. Beast. I want to see this guy. Beast. Absolute beast.
Totally nonstop. And nonstop punching machine.
Right. I when I was talking to him on the Zoom meeting, he told me he was going to provide intelligent pressure. And I was like, oh, I wonder what that exactly means. And that's what it was, because it wasn't like 70, 80 plus punches around, just come forward, reckless abandon that we see from some all action fighters. He was applying pressure without throwing punches. He was in like the 50 to 60 range. He got up to 70 in some rounds. He was just constantly in Teixeira's face and constantly pushing him back, making him think. Defensively, I thought he was slipping punches really well in there. Didn't really take too much damage in there. Teixeira did. But going back to your point with Teixeira being too much too soon, yeah, this guy burst on the scene when he beat Sergio Garcia. That was the Spence Crawford card. And he's part of this new Cuban school of boxing. Let's fast track these guys, 10-0, 11-0, 12-0. Let's get him in a top 10 ranking, interim belt, which, you know, obviously proved that that's a little too much too soon for him. He has to go back to the drawing board. And yeah, he beats Julian Williams. And Julian Williams, he was well past it. I don't know what exactly we learned about that. And with Teixeira, I always felt like he played with his food a lot. Like, you know, he had these late stoppages, But there would be like 5-6 rounds. I'm like, are we still seriously? This fight's still going on. This guy is so much better than his opponent. And he'll eventually get the stoppage or he'll just get a unanimous decision win. And he had a guy in Barao who was just like, wasn't going to take no for an answer on Saturday night. And it was awesome to see. I was getting messages from Mick Conlin, trained with him and is friends with him and told me this guy's a beast. And it's just, this division is insane. So just like this guy literally came out of nowhere or relatively out of nowhere, knocks off one of the hottest prospects in the division. And now we could potentially be seeing Barao versus Charlo or Barao versus anyone in the top 10. And that's the signs of a healthy weight class. I know that at the top of it, there's some antics going on right now. We'll get to that in a second. But I love this. I love a guy coming out of nowhere, seemingly, well, coming in.
Danny's
getting
not
upset.
Out of nowhere. This is I know, what I was trying to say earlier. He's really not. Yeah. Like, he's only out of nowhere because people don't know who he is. But, like, boxing people do. Like, even before this fight, when I'm looking at him, like this is a really tough step up for Tellez. And he's never been in with someone like this. This can go really bad. And it certainly did. But now we have him player because this guy need that. All that guy needed was a platform because he can fight. He can really fight and he's fun. So now he is a player, and it's not so much out of nowhere in the fact, more so the fact that he was just kind of, he was unknown to us over here.
He never fought here. He never fought in the US. He wasn't in the top 10 in the ring. He was not mentioned, you know, like, that's what I mean. Like, obviously this guy was, he has some very good wins and has some good names on his resume. But now he's a player. So now potentially fight Jermell Charlo at 154. Did you see this? Jermell Charlo posted on Instagram stories. It was a lion with a shark in its mouth. And then the next story said, no friends in this business.
I don't get the no friends part, but is he supposed to know the guy? I don't get it.
Well, shark is Jermell. The shark is Spence.
Ah, oh, I was thinking about
no bro. Friends. Spence, Charlo trained together on Derek James for years.
Yeah.
Fight announcement soon, says Jermell Charlo. Could we potentially be seeing Errol Spence step back into the ring to fight Jermell Charlo at 154?
That sounds about right of what's going to happen when you got two sides of PBC guys, two sides who haven't been that active, two sides that are big names, that two sides that'll sell. Yeah. I mean, the fight makes too much financial sense not to happen.
Yeah. It's a crossroads fight. What I'd like to see in these guys be more active. Of course, Spence hasn't fought since the Crawford loss. Charlo hasn't fought since the Canelo loss. And it makes sense, I guess, for one last hurrah to see what they got left. This division's loaded. There's a lot of money in the sport right now. Charlo probably wants a piece of it. Spence, we've been calling for his comeback for a while. Now, I do think there's a mark. They're names. So I do think fans will be interested. I think fans are smart enough to understand that neither of these guys are going to reign over this division. But they can provide maybe one or two more special nights if you're a big-time fan of either guy. It's a crossroads type of fight. Who knows if it gets made? It's just an Instagram story, so it could be literally mean nothing. But Charlo is still, the WBA still recognizes Charlo as partial champion. So if Barao wants to go that route, it's crazy. I don't know any of these organizations.
I don't know who the hell wants a part of Barao. Why Charlo coming back and right into a fight with him is a tough out. And
he's not going to go into a fight with him. He's going to go in a fight with Spence, right?
Exactly. Neither one of them. Brow is going to get left in the cold. I don't think.
He's going to get the Bakram treatment.
Yeah, no one's lining up to fight that guy. He's a nightmare.
No, he's really and is.
There's
man.
Not
that guy was.
He's a big risk. Big risk.
Oh man, I love the way he fought. Like, he just fought so poised, and like
just
wasn't
high. He was just a professional. Just a professional. Yeah. He was professional in every way. Sturdy, strong, and he didn't do anything great. He does everything well. But that's what a world class guy is, man. Yeah, he's going to be a tough out for anybody. And he's only 30, so it's not like you're going to age him out. Like, he's in his prime right now.
He got the 20K bonus.
Nice.
Well
deserved. Good for him.
Yeah, Jake Paul put on these he put on this event. He was there from the first fight of the night, Friday and Saturday, Jake Paul, watching these guys. And we were hanging out afterwards. After Saturday night, we're in one of the clubs or bars in the resort, and Barao comes up into the area where we were with Jake, and Jake told him, whispered, hey bro, you got the 20K, and the guy was ecstatic. and he was just lit up. So that guy had an unbelievable night. He was crying in the ring afterwards because he knew how much hard work this took and knew his life changed forever. Love to see that. Awesome stuff. Love to be on the call. Me and Tarver were going crazy. It was like, because a lot of these fights, like, you know, you don't get a fight. Like, if you call a fight of the year contender, it's such a cool thing. Like, you know, mm-hmm. like some of these, you wish for that. You hope for that. And Tarver is a fun guy to work with. He was pretty amped up watching that fight unfold. That guy, he throws punches while he calls the fight, Tarver.
He coaches, too, while he's calling the fight sometimes.
Yes.
He coaches yep. He coaches from the table.
He's doing this. He's like throwing a jab along with him, and he's not calling the fight anymore. He's just straight up yelling out instructions. And I'm like, all right, we got to the portion of the night where Tarver is giving out instructions, and he's boxing along with these guys. And he's
that means the fights are really good, and the fights, yeah. the fights are good because Antonio Tarver is now basically boxing.
That's awesome. Xander Zayas was there all weekend. Newly crowned WBO champion at 154 pounds, got into the ring and had a little square down, face off with Burrow. I don't think he'll be fighting Burrow anytime soon. Doesn't have to. Zayas was talking about I'll fight Taez before this. You know, I'll take his interim belt. Blah blah blah. Not going to happen either. Just to keep talking about 154, Zayas. And Virgil Ortiz still chirping at each other. Mm-hmm. Zayas kind of talking down to Virgil Ortiz, saying, you know, when you get a belt, come talk to me. Until then, I don't want to hear from you. And it's just like, I like Zayas. I really do. And I understand, like, you get the belt, you can talk like that. You can talk that talk. But it just kind of shows how messed up this sport is sometimes. Because if you just looked at these two fighters, Virgil Ortiz is in a class above Zayas. He's fought Boachuk. He's fought Madrimov. He's about to fight Lubin. Did a lot of damage at 147. Has a sterling record and one of the highest knockout percentages in all of the sport. Then you have Zayas, who is 22 years old. Doesn't really have a notable win. Went the WBO route, which Top Rank is very rich, affiliated with WBO. And he's talking down to Virgil because he doesn't have a piece of hardware around his waist. I just gave me the wrong taste of him. I was like, come on, man. Like, really?
It's the only thing you can do. Here? It's the only thing you can do. Just like you said. Like, Virgil is universally respected by everybody in the sport, fighters included. The only thing he doesn't have is a world title. It's crazy at this point that Virgil, as good as he is with the wins that he has, is not a world champion. So what is Zayas gonna say? You know, I guess you give him his respect, but also, like, if you give him too much respect, then it's just like, all right, then we should fight because, you know, he's got to be like, no, I'm above here. I got to, and he's also negotiating because if they are going to fight, he wants to get paid. And I am the champion, so I got to get paid. So you wait your turn. Okay, it's your turn. Cool. I need a big bag. So that's part of it. I understand what Zayas is doing. I agree with you. It does leave a poor taste in your mouth, but what do you expect him to do? You can't say you beat the better fighters. You can't say that I have a better record than you, even though I'm a titleist and you're not. So he really doesn't have anything else to say to Virgil because Virgil is a steamrolling train right now. He's on track to be possibly the guy at 54. He's got a fight coming up, fighting Pro Box's own Erickson Hammer Lubin. Listen to this, Dan. Lubin has fought Charlo, Fundora, and now is going to fight Virgil Ortiz. Yikes! That is a murderer's row of guys.
I remember I was at ringside for the Charlo fight, and they were really hyping that up. Both of those guys were the hottest prospects in the sport. It was like unheard of that they were fighting each other, and Charlo erased them in, I think it was the first round?
First round. Uppercut.
It was just like he landed first, and it happened so quick, and Lubin had to go back to the drawing board. This is like a time in boxing where a loss meant a lot more than it means today. And everyone kind of wrote him off, Lubin. And I was like, God, this guy's still good. Like, this guy was like prospect of the year. And he just got caught in the first round. Works his way back up. Gets to the ring with Fundora. Still one of the bloodiest and most gruesome fights I think we've seen in the last 10 years. Fundora versus Lubin. His face rearranged.
Great fight. Well, he was coming back in that fight. He dropped Fundora in the seventh. He got dropped early, I think, in the second. And then he drops Fundora in the seventh. And is like battling back, and they were going back and forth, you know, like in true Fundora fashion. Generally, he's always in those kind of fights, but Fundora was getting hurt, and then Lubin's face just fell apart. And then by the ninth round, it was like, it was just, he looked like, it looked like that meme of Martin from the Martin Lawrence on the Martin Show, just all lumped up and swollen and bleeding. They had to stop the fight. I mean, he was still very much in the fight, but that was a great, great fight. So, he's got the one punch KO to Charlo. He's got the back and forth war with Fundora, and look where Fundora has gone from there. Yeah, so it's a shame they write off Lubin because he was super talented guy. He beat Jesus Ramos Jr. in a bit of a snooze fest. So that's another really good win. A lot of people do, but he comes through it with the win. The judges had it kind of wide, which is weird. Beats Argyro Holmes, which is another snooze fest. But this is a you can't be in a snooze fest with Ortiz. This is going to be a fight.
Yeah, I mean, I just love this division, and it's just there's constant reminders of how good this division is, constant chatter, whether it's Zayas talking crazy to Virgil Ortiz, Lubin stepping into the ring with Virgil Ortiz boots, fighting Lima, this upset of Taez by Barao. Division's loaded. And, yeah, Zayas, that stuff kind of pissed me off. It just, like, shows... Just there's too many belts. Like, this guy just has a belt. Like, he wouldn't, if there was one belt Zayas wouldn't have it. You know, he would be fourth, fifth ranked, sixth ranked guy. And then,
I wouldn't even have him in the top five. He's not in my top five.
He's not even in the top 10, I don't think, for the ring's top 10. I know it's not the end all be all, but like, I mean, if you got it, flaunt it. If you got that belt, flaunt it. I understand everything's a negotiation, everything, even tweets are negotiations. He called him a 27 year old prospect. He called Virgil Ortiz that. I would be pissed off. I was Ortiz and I read that.
Bro, he beat Bohochek and Madrimov. He beat Madrimov better than Crawford did. Like, that's a massive statement win. Also, Mean Machine. People forget how Mean Machine was a SOB, man. At 147, he was a problem. He rocked, and some people thought he dropped Crawford when they fought. Virgil even admitted he got rocked by Mean Machine, Kavalauskas. You know, he's a bad dude.
He beat Mean Machine. He was basically like, he was like, wow, what year was that? 2021, 5 years ago, 4 years ago, and he's 20. Yeah, at age 23. It's pretty impressive. Yeah, I don't think we have to really cement our case here. I think a lot of our listeners and fans would agree that Zayas was talking crazy there, but it's something he has to do. The rest of the card, so we went from like fight of the year contender, right? Taez and Barao. This main event, I don't know if you caught the highlights or you watched it, Yankee Rivera and Angelino Cordova fight to a draw. Bro, the worst fight I've ever seen in my life. Holding, headbutts, judo, referees getting involved, everything. Just an ugly, ugly, ugly fight. Zero mesh, zero clean hard punches. Really hard fight to call. Not that anyone cares about that, but like it was an awful fight.
And this is another, because I actually rate him... Rivera high. I mean, I've really liked what I've seen from him. This is another one of those matchmaking setups. You're like, maybe a little too much too soon, but yeah, their styles just did not match. We do not need to see a rematch. That was enough.
Oh my God, no.
That was enough. But Cordova, man, he's a bad dude too. And that's what I was saying. I'm like, he used every trick in the book,
to behind the rabbit punches. Holding, like, this is how he fights, and like it's a tough night in there, a lot of headbutts, and then towards the end of the fight Rivera was the one holding. It just was an ugly fight, and I thought Rivera won barely, didn't have it a draw. It was hard for Rivera to land anything clean. You know, this is only his 10th fight, or not even 10 fights,
not even, I think it was like 8th.
Yeah, so they were trying to fast track him to a vacant title shot against Sandoval, who beat Taraji, but that fight was horrible. Lucas Body got a win. He beat Roger Gutierrez, former champ, 130. So that was a nice win for Body. He's now top five at WBA. Then I talk about Jamal.
He's another
Hart.
One who's been, he's using your term, he's been playing with his food lately. He's looking good, drops a guy early, and then just doesn't get the finish.
That's the one thing I talked to. Right. I saw him after the fight, and he looked like, kind of disappointed. I was like, yo, what's going on, man? Like, what's tell me how you feeling? He's like, I don't know, man. I should have got him out of there. I got to throw more punches. So he gets it, you know. He said Gutierrez hit me early, and I got a little cautious. But Body is dangerous. He's got crazy power, 135. It's just about him putting those punches together, being a little more confident. But he's top five WBA.
Yeah, he's not active, but he's a good puncher, and he's got good, clean skills. You know, we've seen those highlights. Even the knockdown from that fight with Gutierrez is beautiful. Cuts his head off the line, lands a right hand. And then, you know, obviously we talk about the H2O Silv KO, like super beautiful combination to finish that off. So, you know, he's got it. It's just about, like you said, I think confidence is exactly right. Getting the confidence to be able to let those hands go and not keep those hands at home and get out there and get these stoppages. Because listen, stoppages sell, man. Stoppages sell.
I mean, it's how the guy burst onto the scene. Yeah, he knocked out Silv, knockout of the year. So he's got it. You're right. You just got to let those hands go. Jamal Harvey, I really like this kid. He is the class of the 2024 Olympic team. He signed with MVP, has his debut. He's fighting in a six-rounder against a guy who is 6-1. Nothing really of note. Getting pieced up the first round. Harvey is landing everything. Nothing like too crazy, not like a 10-8 round or a knockdown or anything like that. And the fight gets stopped. And I'm like, oh, okay. The guy must have got hurt, you know, maybe his shoulder, his hand. He told Claudia Trejos that he was bored. He said, this is Jamal's night. Let him have his night. I'm bored. I'm done. And that was it.
That's a first for me. Never heard that one. You ever heard that one? I'm bored.
No.
I've heard guys say they have to use the bathroom. They have to use a restroom, and that's why they bailed out of a fight. But never on board. That's wow.
Right. We've heard guys make up excuses, like make up an injury that because they don't want to be in there. But literally was just like, I'm done. I'm bored. This bores me. Because he has like a job or something, a career. He was an engineer or something. Probably saw the writing on the wall. I'm about to get just either splattered or beat up over six rounds. So let me just give a quote here. And yeah, Claudia was like, she'd been doing this for a real long time. And she's like, I never heard anything like that. I was with Donaire. He was like, what? I mean, well, that kid will never fight again, obviously.
No, I was going to say, I'm like, that's the end. We just watched the end of a career because if that's the case, you don't really belong there.
You'll never be booked again. Yeah, so that was the card. That was like pretty much the significant card over the weekend. MVP. Putting on some fights, man. 20 fights. That was a big undertaking. Two nights in a row. A lot of prospects, a lot of female fights. And then the fight night, which was Saturday night. It was their first fight night. They're planning to do more. Had some more title fights and had some more bigger fights. You know, like Ateyes and Barao, Body and Gutierrez. Stephanie Hahn, she got a win. And she, Holly Holm. She's going to be most likely to be fighting Holly Holm next for a title. Holly Holm joined us in the broadcast booth. That was pretty damn cool. So we could see Holly Holm fight for a world title.
Holly Holm. I mean, I would fancy her in that fight. I think Holly Holm still has it, and she's got so much experience. She got that first 10 rounder in against that younger Mexican girl. Yeah. And she looked good, but she showed that she could do it for 10. And that's all it takes for ladies. I mean, if she can do the 10-2s, then she's got the size and the world-class skill. She's going to be hard to beat. She's going to be really hard to beat.
Oh, yeah. She was talking about, like, she's like, 10-2s? Are you kidding me? I was fighting 5-5s
exactly.
In MMA. She's like, this is nothing to me. 10-2s
is a sprint. It's a sprint. Exactly. Yeah.
She's pretty much said that. Han is a little bit older and is good, but, like, that's going to be a fight that they're going to plan to do. Yeah, it was a good fight. Good night of fights, two nights. 20 fights, sacrificed my voice and my health, but you know, that's what I do.
It's what we do for the game. Sport. It's what we do.
It's what we do for the game. Chalk it up to the game.
Love of the game.
All right. So can we talk about something that broke last week that I don't understand what's the big deal? Canelo Alvarez brings in Jerome Boots Ennis as a sparring partner in preparation for Terrence Crawford. Why is this such a big deal?
I think it's awesome. I look at this from a boxing perspective that you've got Canelo, who is the bigger man. It's my weight class. You're coming to fight for my titles. You're fighting a guy that you said a year and a half ago, man, that fight doesn't do anything for me. I'm not interested. So you might be looking at Canelo like, he might just be looking at this guy like, this little guy's coming up. Yes, he's Crawford, but like he's smaller and I'm going to beat him just based on my size and being Canelo. And could kind of go through the motions a little bit. He's also older. Like, you know, I'm just no. He's getting in young, hungry talent to spar with. That tells me a lot. If he was just trying to get through camp and just have sparring, like use the same sparring partners over and over again, which you see a lot of older guys do, and just kind of get through it and not test themselves and be competitive, that would be more indicative than this happening. Is like, oh no, this guy's taking Crawford very, very seriously, and he's going to come fully prepared. If you're bringing in young studs like him to fight with, also he's got Darrell Blast Val Saint. He's a Pro Box TV guy who's a stud at 54. He's bringing these young studs who are athletic and they can hit and they're big and they know how to box and they can switch sides. It's like, wow, all right, Canelo's got the best sparring partners that he can for this particular fight. And I think that's good. I think it's good for the sport. I think it shows you that, you know, he's taking this seriously, and this is a major fight everyone's going to watch. And it just makes you feel like the fight would be better that way.
Okay, I like that. What I didn't like was some of the takes that I saw from boxing and Twitter, and I have to take those with a grain of salt. Oh my God, this is ridiculous what I'm about to say. I shouldn't even say it, but I'm going to say it anyway. Why not? We're on a podcast. There were people saying that Boots, it was like anti-black code. He went against the culture to train and help Canelo beat another black man in Crawford.
It's so reductive. It's ridiculous. This is boxing, guys. This is the most diverse. Gyms are so diverse. Everybody comes in. You do your work, and I mean, it's
dumb.
I mean, the hell am I gonna say about it? But
it's nothing to say about it because it's the dumbest thing I've ever heard.
Yeah, I look at it purely from a boxing standpoint.
And, right. Like, what does Boots owe to Crawford? They're like rivals. They're supposed to fight each other. Are they friends? No. If it was like a friend and it was like his cousin or something, or like it was like a training partner, close friend. Yes. Then you have a juicy little narrative here, a little nugget piece of drama. No, this is just a guy who's looking to be good, to be great. If you're Boots Ennis and you get the call from Canelo, like, you're taking that, bro. Like, that's training with an all-time great. You're trying to get better. Iron sharpens iron. Don't know why we're giving that any light, but I think it's cool because I've said this for a while now, and ever since we linked up on the pod, I kind of understand fighters a little bit better and understand how you guys think and what you guys do. I feel like sparring is the last thing that fighters have where it's away from the media, it's out of the limelight. For the most part, we don't know who spars who unless they start filming, which I think is really lame, but we've seen more and more of that lately, like sparring sessions leaked or sparring sessions, details of them. I think this is one of the bigger sparring sessions we've seen in a while. I think anyone saw it coming because Boots is a very big name and Canelo is Canelo. And a lot of times we'll see a prospect jump into the ring, a photo op is taken and it shows up on the Ring magazine, or the guys that you named for, Yoenny Hernandez also has been sparring with Canelo. And that wouldn't really move the needle and that wouldn't get people talking. But you see Boots Ennis, who is a potential top 10 pound for pound guy, a unified champ, and Canelo, then that's when your juices get flowing. And that's when you're like, oh shoot, made me stop dead in my tracks. And then I guess I started thinking about what does this mean? But you know what I mean? Like, when it comes to sparring, I feel like that's your guy's final little like secretive thing that fighters can do where it's away from the public.
Yeah. And also, like you said, it's usually bringing in prospects. You bring in young studs, whatever, like a Blast Val Saint. Like I mentioned him, like Canelo brought him in. That makes sense. But like bringing in another A-class unified world champion, that then becomes a collaboration. That's a collab. You got a collab between two guys. They're both learning from each other. Boots isn't coming in there to be the sparring partner. He's not coming in there to act like, you know, he's Crawford. He's coming in there to spar with Canelo Alvarez, and he's going to be Boots. And that's what makes that different. And for me, I look at that like Canelo's bringing that in for competition. He's bringing it in for someone who's going to get his juices flowing. So, listen, all right, I need to be on when I show up to the gym tomorrow morning because this guy's going to get in my ass otherwise. So that's the way I look at it. I look at it from a fighter perspective that, like, if you're willing to put the competitive nature on the line right like that, like, hey, listen, if I don't show up, I'm getting my ass kicked tomorrow. And Canelo probably hasn't had that happen many times and is, you know, in recent years. But I remember that. I remember when I was coming back, a bunch of my comebacks, I know I was an older fighter. I needed young, hungry guys. If I wasn't that excited to come to the gym and spar. I couldn't just go through the motions with my regular sparring partner, in-house guy that I always beat up, who really can't hurt me, and I don't really want to hurt him anyway. So I wanted to have other guys come, or I wanted to go to other gyms to feel uncomfortable, to feel competitive, to have that feeling. So when it happens on fight night, I'm not surprised, because 35-year-old me was different than 33-year-old me in terms of what it felt like when that came up. So I think it's a good sign that Canelo is putting himself into those awkward positions, those dark places during camp, because he feels like he's going to feel it on fight night.
Bro, you just got me fired up.
Yeah, this got me very excited.
I don't know why. I think I just was like, oh, what's the big deal? And then I kind of thought about it more. And I was like, oh, it's just sparring. Then I started thinking about, like, the mind games. And I started thinking about the things that you just said. Like, this this is very important. And this is a twofold thing. It's obviously to get the great work. And there's some pictures coming out of Boots in the southpaw position. You know, Boots and Crawford don't exactly fight the same way, but they're very similar in terms of the switching and being explosive. I think Boots is a little more explosive and throws more punches, takes more risks. Bud is more of a counter puncher. But
at this stage, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So it's like twofold. So Canelo's getting great work, like you just said. And also, I feel like it sends a little bit of a message to Crawford. Like, okay, like this guy really is taking this fight seriously. He's taking this fight. It's not just another walk in the park. It's not just the last five fights of Canelo's career, which have been, you know, let's just say what they have been. They, you know, they're Canelo, a massive favorite in all these fights. Still going to be a favorite, 2-1. Yeah,
he didn't bring in special sparring for Skull.
No.
He didn't bring in a Skull lookalike, you know? Like, he's just like, he's like, my Mexican will beat this guy. I'll show up and be able to beat this guy. And even like a Munguia, like that wasn't, I don't think he had to do anything special for Munguia. It's like, I'm going to beat this guy because of who I am. Crawford, I need serious, serious work. I need to train special for this man because he's special. And that's how I saw it. It changed kind of my idea in my head a little bit about how serious that Canelo, I know he takes everything seriously, but this makes it a next level.
Yeah, it kind of was like, I wouldn't say put his ego aside, but like he's bringing in a big name, and it shows that he's taking the fight very serious. Maybe he's listening to everyone say that he's on the back nine. You know, maybe he's listening to the roar that has been the Crawford fans or the Crawford backers. You know, it's now the sexy pick is to go with Crawford. I like it a lot. You talked me into it, or not into it, but you just let me know exactly what this is all about, because I think that the part where everyone was talking about the race stuff kind of gave me a sour taste, but just in terms of the X's and O's and what this means,
no, I'm looking at
pretty freaking cool.
Also, counterpoint though, Crawford has Lester Martinez in camp, by the way.
Yeah.
Which is awesome. He's a real 168 pounder. He's a puncher. He's actually got very, very good technique. He's really, really on the come up right now. He's getting ready for, our Canadian friend, Mbili, yeah, which is an awesome fight. And Lester, I think in terms of power, body size, technique, I think that's it's as good as you can get for Canelo, I think, at this point.
Man, he's
young, hungry guy who's gonna push Crawford. That Crawford has to show up every day for that sparring session and be like, oh, here we go. That's the mindset, Dan. That's what I keep thinking about. When Canelo shows up and Boots is there, he goes, here we go. It's gonna be gotta lock in
this guy again. Damn,
you
it.
Know when Crawford gets in the ring with Lester, it's like, all right, here we go. Gotta lock in. It's gonna be if I have a bad day, I'm gonna get beat up. So
I would love to
bad days.
Yeah, I'd love to see
both of them. I'd like to see both of them.
Crawford and Canelo and Boots. I mean, that
Canelo
was probably
and Boots,
a
Crawford
very,
and Lester.
Very, yeah, that was probably a very tightened security, no phones. Even though I think it'll be good for the promotion, you know, I think the promotion needs it. It's definitely a big fight, and we're like 3 weeks, 2 weeks out. I mean, it doesn't feel huge. I don't know, how do you feel?
It doesn't feel huge. But also, I always felt like the September fights kind of get lost in the summer. Like, it's like September turns, and it's so quick. Football. It's like, oh, Labor Day, boom, wow, here we are. You know, it's like everyone's enjoying the last bit of summer. And then September hits, whether it's your kids going to school or, you know, your college going to college, whatever. But also just everything changes. The season changes right away.
Right.
It's like right after Labor Day, everything changes. Boom. And it's like, now we got a big fight right on our doorstep. So I think that's part of it. I don't think it's so much that, you know, the fight doesn't deserve it or won't build or won't be big. But yeah, that's part of it. I just feel like September's a weird month that way. Transitions.
No, you're totally
fast.
Right. All of a sudden, September hits, back to school. Boom. Gets a little cold in the air, a little chill in the air.
Yeah,
football.
You blink, it's Thanksgiving.
And then, it's going to be big. The fact that it's on Netflix, I think, changes everything. I think it's going to have so many eyeballs on it. And
there's also a little fatigue for talking about it, I think. I think there is a slight fatigue, you know, because people have been asking about it. What do you think about this? You know, for so long already, because this fight has been built up. But it's going to get, the juices will get flowing again, I think, after Labor Day.
You want to get your thoughts on Tank and Jake?
It's a circus, man. It's a circus. It's
get under the tent.
It's yeah, get on the tent, ladies and gentlemen. Grab a ticket stub. Grab a seat in the bleachers. It's a circus. I don't think Tank had any notion he was going to fight, step in the ring again with Roach ever again. And I don't think he's ever going to have a real fight again after this. He's going to have an exhibition. I think this is the last time we're going to see Tank on a stage. I just don't think he wants to do it anymore. And this is pretty indicative of that. You know, he's been alluding to it for a while now, saying some things about going to therapy and this and that, and thinking about my family and thinking about my future. And like, once those creep into your mind, and especially once they start hitting mics and starting getting out into the public, that means you've been thinking about it a lot. And I bet you the people around Tank, the machine that operates around Tank, has been listening to this for a while. And they're like, you know what? This is probably the most financially smart idea to do right now, instead of going to a tough training camp, getting ready for Roach again. And that kid's hungry. He's got momentum. And you could lose all of this if you go out there and lose. So I think this is probably the biggest duck of all time. But at the same time, it's just timing, and Tank's going for the money, man.
He's going for the bag, which a lot of fighters would do. You're right. He told me he wants to go to therapy, and I did not prod him. I did not push him. It wasn't some sit-down Oprah interview where I tried to make the man cry. He just said it to me, and I was, as he was telling me that, I was like, oh my God, this is one heck of an admission. This is one heck of a thing to say. And right then and there, I was
unprompted.
Like,
unprompted admission.
Unprompted. Listen, I consider myself a decent journalist, but I didn't have to push him for that. He just wanted to get that off his chest and get it out there. And it went out there, and it went super viral, and he said everything he said. And when he said, I don't want to box no more. I want to go to therapy. I want to be a better person for my kids, but I'm afraid if I go to therapy, I'll lose that fire. And that's the first thing I heard. And then you think, just look up from the timeline from there on out. He said that in December. The fight got pushed back a bunch of times before that with Roach. So he goes into the ring with Roach in March and arguably loses the fight, gets the draw, legal problems, all sorts of issues with the rematch. We're not getting it right away. Flirting with a Jake Paul fight. And here comes Jake Paul, kind of like a once-in-a-lifetime type of opportunity. Like, this guy's not – there's not Jake Pauls around in other eras to step into the ring with when it comes to exhibitions. And he's going to take that back. So the timeline of it shouldn't shock you, but it's the timing of it that makes you upset as a fan of the sport, because there's the Roach rematch, because there's a fight with Shakur, there's a fight with Teofimo, there's a fight with anyone around 135 and 140. There's like five or six fights we want to see Tank in, and as a fan, we just want to see that competitively. But he just doesn't want to do it anymore. He just doesn't have the fire, and as far as I can see. And I think the jury's out. So, I mean, can he go from the Jake fight and fight Roach or Shakur? Yeah. Will he? I mean, if you just look at his track record, it's hard to say that he'll do that.
No, I don't see that. I don't see that at all. He's an active champion with a title, and he's going to go take an exhibition with a guy 70 pounds more than him, and he's going to make $150 million. He's not coming back. What would be the point? The Jake fight will be there. If he fights Roach in September, Jake will be there. He doesn't want any more fights. He doesn't want any more tough fights. Roach would be a tough fight. Shakur would be a tough fight. Teofimo would be a tough fight. He doesn't want those fights. He doesn't want a hard training camp. He doesn't want a hard fight. He wants that golden ticket that every fighter wants. But it's not up to us to decide when a fighter's done. It seems like he's done. It seems like he doesn't want to be here anymore. Doesn't want to do it anymore. He said it openly. And listen, like you said, Jake Paul is a once in a lifetime opportunity. You could go get that money with a guy. Honestly, I mean, people are like, oh, so much bigger, he might hurt him. He's not hurting him. This is not going to be a difficult fight for Tank. I'm not saying he's going to go out there and blow Jake out, but I'm saying I don't think Jake's going to hit him at all.
I haven't actually thought about what it's actually going to look like, because, you know, I'm just not thinking of that. It's just
you've never seen small guys spar big guys in gyms. It happens, dude. And I've sparred heavyweights before. I've seen a lot of small guys spar with much, much bigger guys. You'd be surprised. It happens. It's usually the smaller guy tuning up the bigger guy.
So if Tank lands something and it knocks, staggers, drops Jake Paul, that's a huge viral moment. That's a big time mm-hmm. thing. And I think Tank would be as bigger than he's ever been before. And then he's just going to retire after that?
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. Listen, fighters love to make comebacks that were unplanned. So who knows? He is still young. But I don't know. I just don't think the desire is there. And that showed in the Roach fight. It wasn't there. You know, dude, Dan, we always talk about this. When Al has a plan, he sticks to the plan. The plan was to fight Roach, who was a 16-1 underdog going into the fight. Mm-hmm. And then Jake Paul was going to step into the ring and they were going to announce that fight.
Yep.
Okay. It didn't go as planned. We got through with the draw. Now we have a potential rematch with good money fight now because people are excited. Nah, we already worked out this Jake Paul thing. Let's do the Jake Paul thing.
Yep.
A little bit of bait and switch. I don't think the Roach fight was ever real, the rematch. I really don't.
Yeah, they baited him along. And
yep.
Yeah, I mean, here's the positives to come out of this. If they stack the undercard, which I think they will, that could be a good thing.
Depends. If it's a really top-heavy financial fight, who knows?
Well, we'll see. But if they stack the undercard like and put some of the fights on it that we wanted to see, like the Oshaki Foster, Stephen Fulton, we got a big women's fight, get some other fights we really want to see. If this allows Shakur Stevenson to potentially fight Lamont Roach, and Shakur is also publicly negotiating with Teofimo, if it leads to Roach fighting Shakur next, all for that. If it leads to a very fun night, entertainment-wise, on November 13th, and we get a viral moment, and we all go back the next day, the sun will rise the next day. Also seeing a lot of people like blaming Floyd for this, like, oh, this exhibition culture, blah, 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 blah. That's a big reason.
Nah, that's always been a thing.
Exhibitions have been around forever, but we've never seen a guy. We've never seen a guy like an active champion at age 30 to go the exhibition route. And I'll say this because there wasn't a route. This route didn't exist. Like Floyd did the McGregor fight, which was on this date 8 years ago. Because McGregor, it was like a perfect storm. McGregor came out of nowhere, and then he got that fight, and they fought it. It just so happened to be that Mayweather had already beaten everyone. He was 36, 37. Like, Jake Paul is like a once-in-a-lifetime type of...
Wasn't he retired for like 2 years already? Floyd hadn't fought for 2 years. He came off the couch for that.
Did he? I thought he was a little bit
active. He hadn't fought, no.
But whatever. My point being is that he had already beaten everyone. And the same thing with Ali. Like when Ali fought Inoki and he fought the defensive lineman, he was 34, 35, but he had already been in the wars. He had already given us those nights. I think that's what's angering the fans so much is that Gervonta has five or six fights, a rematch, just waiting there to be made. But
Floyd was off for 23 months before the McGregor fight.
Right, but you're telling me that if Floyd was, say Floyd came off of the De La Hoya fight, and he was pretty freaking big then. He wasn't as big as he is for the McGregor one, but in terms of people knowing who he was. And there was a YouTuber out there named Jake Paul that generated a ton of money, eyeballs, that had a freaking streaming service behind him in Netflix, willing to dish out tons of money. You're telling me that Mayweather wouldn't have gone that route? No, you think Mayweather said, no. I'm going to fight for five more years in really, really tough fights, grueling fights. I'll still make a lot of money, but then I'll go fight the YouTuber. Then I'll go fight the MMA guy. No, he would have took that when he could. And that's what Tank is doing
I don't think so.
You don't think so?
Floyd didn't. No. When Floyd fought somebody and the fight was arguable or close, he fought them immediate rematches. That's putting himself in a difficult situation. This guy trained his whole life to be the greatest boxer of our generation. He wanted to be the greatest boxer of all time. And he thinks he is. You know, he believes that he achieved that. I don't think so. I don't think he would have risked. There was a machine behind Floyd. Floyd was groomed from birth to be what we saw. I don't think he would have allowed just that money to get in the way. I don't know. I Floyd was different. Floyd was very, very different. Floyd was disciplined. Floyd put himself in difficult situations. Floyd made himself suffer. Floyd sacrificed. I don't know. I don't see that in Floyd. I think he would have needed to finish his work and then do what he did, just like he did.
It's hard to say because he wasn't the level that he was at for the McGregor fight. Towards the end of his career, he took an exhibition. But I just think that if a lot of fighters were presented this opportunity, that Tank is being presented, I think they would do it.
Yeah, but you're talking about 0.001% of champions who are going to be even in the running for this kind of right. discussion. So it's kind of a moot point in terms of who would do it. Anybody would do it, but like I think the tip top guy, like, is Andre Ward going to do this? No.
Well, he's flirting with a comeback, but yeah, I know what you're saying. But like
he wouldn't have done it in his prime.
I think these types of exhibitions are like perfect storms. You have a guy in Jake Paul who is an influencer YouTuber with Netflix attached to him. And you have Gervonta Davis.
You got to look at it like this. Gervonta wants out. Floyd didn't want out. Gervonta wants out. This is a perfect out for him. Perfect out.
Floyd did at the end of his career, which I feel like fans were a little more. And it was also the first one, too. The McGregor, I know it was a real fight, but that was kind of an exhibition. That was the first of what we've been seeing. And we've seen a lot of exhibitions.
That was Floyd's re-entrance. That wasn't his way out. That was his re-entrance. And he just happened to be able to make a ridiculous amount of money.
Yeah, I mean,
I think that did more for McGregor than it did for Floyd.
Was McGregor's like last time he was ever like showed any competitive juices was that Floyd fight.
And the amount of money he made more money that night than his entire career put together before and after.
Wild.
So he bought a
yacht.
Yeah,
I don't know what the numbers are in terms of the money. I've heard a lot of different numbers floating around. If Tyson got $30 million, and I feel like that's a way bigger event than this one, then. Yeah. It's a lot. And that's another thing, too, that fans are upset. It's like, you know, there's a guy out there in Saudi Arabia throwing around crazy money. So is it that much more money to fight Jake than to fight Shakur in Saudi or T.O. or any of those guys or sign a three-fight deal? Like if Tank signed a three-fight deal with Saudi Arabia, it would be massive. It would be probably just underneath Canelo's in terms of value.
Yeah, but the difference is those are real tough fights and this is an exhibition.
Exactly. Yeah. Just saying, that's another reason. I'm going through all the reasons why fans are just not on board or just upset with Tank because of the timing of it and everything. There's money in – there are big money fights out there, and there are big fights out there. He can still take them. You know, everything we've seen leads to him not doing it, but he could fight Jake. He could knock him out, and then he can fight two or three more times in the fights we want to see and then retire at 32, 33 years old. Happy ever after.
We'll see.
Boxing doesn't always have happy endings. This episode has a happy ending because we're going to say goodbye. A lot going on. We'll be back September with a more... Back to our two times a week. Now with cats out of the bag where Chris is a Chuck Norris stunt coordinator. And we'll get back into some big fights. With Canelo Crawford, everything Canelo Crawford starting September. We're going to get deep into that. Maybe some more voicemail episodes. Go through it all. What's the rest of the day looking
like? I like it. Back to the gym. Literally going to go jump on my bike, ride back to the gym. Got 3 hours of boxing this afternoon. Come home, read some scripts.
What a life.
Hollywood stuff.
Hollywood stuff. Hollywood. Chris, Hollywood Algieri. Cut yourself at all times. Keep your hands up at all times. Say hello to DM.
Two Good & Co. coffee creamers are made with farm-fresh cream, real milk, and contain 3 grams of sugar per serving. That's 40% less than the 5 grams per serving in leading traditional coffee creamers for a rich, delicious experience. Whether you enjoy your coffee hot, cold, bold, or frothy, Two Good coffee creamers make every sip a good one. Two Good coffee creamers, real goodness in every sip. Find them at your local Kroger in the creamer aisle.